Part 3, questions 21 to 25 refer to the following lecture.
Welcome back to the program. Well, statistics show that the fastest growing sports in Britain are adventure sports, and I have with me Stan Leach, an official at the Sports Council, who's going to tell us a bit about some of them. Stan, where should we start?
Well, most people start with walking, I think. Although, of course, strictly speaking, it's not necessarily an adventure sport, but it's what gets most people outdoors. Indeed, the great thing about walking in Britain is the endless variety, from an easy stroll to a country pub to an energetic walk up a high peak. If you want to take up walking, you can start with a few short circular walks and then pick something longer and more demanding.
What's this thing called scrambling I've been hearing about?
Yeah, scrambling is sort of in the gray area between walking and climbing. Scrambles are graded according to difficulty, and on the harder ones, which are quite close to rock climbing, it's best to go with an expert.
Well, that brings us nicely on to climbing. That's really caught on here lately, hasn't it?
Yes, and of course you know it doesn't have to mean going up the really big ones like Everest. Climbing might seem rather terrifying to begin with, but it's great fun and really keeps you fit. You start by climbing small crags before moving on to a rock face. I went for a day's lesson with mountaineer Alan Kimber in Scotland, and it was really scary, but really exciting.
Right. Well, what's next?
Mountain biking. If you can get used to the saddle, you can cycle across Britain. But unlike in the USA, where there are special cycling paths, in Britain, most of the paths are the same as for walkers, which can cause a bit of trouble. After the initial investment, there's one bike that cost £4,000, but you can get a very good one for £200. It's a cost-efficient sport, and there are relatively easy trips, such as the Pyrenees Traverse, which has 70% downhill slopes with no major climbs.
I see you've got skydiving on your list. Surely that's only for people who are very brave or mad.
Well, it is the sort of thing you'd expect to only see in the movies, but you'd be amazed how many people go in for it these days. 6 hours of training will give you enough background to make the first jump. People who really take to it often join display teams. So if you take it up, you might find yourself taking part in special events.
Okay, and finally, canoeing. That always looks a bit dangerous to me in that tiny boat with water rushing everywhere.
Well, there are some terrible bits of water where the real canoeing experts go, but beginners can start in gentler waters and build up. There's one stretch in Wales that was designed for the World Championships that has a dam release so that at preset times, the water runs through. You can phone up and they'll say it's a full release tomorrow or a quarter release, so you can choose your times according to difficulty.
Okay, Stan, thanks a lot. After the break, we'll be going to Canada to look at...
Questions 26 through 30 referred to the following radio interview.
My guest today is Douglas Turner, who recently spent a weekend climbing a mountain in Africa. Douglas, how did this come about?
Well, I suppose it started with seeing adverts for activity holidays in the national press week after week. It somehow got into my subconscious. Then there was one which said, "Are you ready for the greatest physical challenge of your life? 5,000 meters, one weekend." And somewhat against my better judgment, I found myself picking up the phone straight away. You see, I simply hadn't trained for it. The nearest I'd got was a bit of hill walking 5 years ago.
What did you think you would get out of the weekend?
Generally, when I go to things, I enjoy meeting people, but in this case, I was afraid the rest of the group would be a bunch of healthy types and I wouldn't have much in common with them. And as for the physical effort of climbing the mountain, I thought I'd be lucky if I survived the weekend at all. It was more a kind of wanting to see what I was mentally capable of doing. Would I get cold feet and not go at all, or go but give up halfway up? That sort of thing.
But you made it to the top.
Yes, I did. Much to my surprise, I can tell you.
And were you right about the other people?
No, actually. There were a few serious walkers and climbers, but most of the participants were professional people who wanted to do something quite different once in a while, more or less like me, in fact. So, not intimidating after all, though I have to admit that nearly all of them were fitter than me. Actually, I hadn't realized so many people did this sort of thing. It was funny. When I told a friend that I was going, she said, Oh, not another one. Everyone I know is going climbing this year. There's a big thing about pushing yourself to your limit at the moment, isn't there? You're welcome to it, she said. You won't catch me up there.
How did you all get along together?
I suppose we were a bit suspicious of each other at first, but that soon went, and we somehow developed a really close group feeling, and nobody complained about having to wait for the slow ones, which usually included me. Or at least, if they did complain, they did it out of earshot. In fact, on the flight home, we were busy exchanging cards and decided to book another weekend trip as a party, but without a mountain in sight this time.
So how did the weekend compare with your expectations?
It was much better than I had expected. It made me change in subtle ways. As I had hoped, I gained in self-knowledge and I learned to get on with people I couldn't escape from. But I also became much more observant of the tiny little wildflowers, for instance, and that was quite a bonus.
I suppose you're going to be a regular mountain climber now?
The pair of boots I wore, I'm keeping with the mud still on them on my desk at work. They're a kind of trophy to prove to myself that I've done it. But I somehow don't think I'll be using them again. I'm going to have to put them somewhere else, less visible though, because it's sometimes a bit embarrassing when other people are impressed.
Douglas Turner, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Questions 31 to 35 refer to the following radio interview.
He is a man who has given us hours of interest and entertainment over the years with his weekly series of wildlife programs. He is, of course, Martin Middleton. Martin, you've been to the four corners of the earth in search of material. Where did this love of adventures come from?
I don't really know. I didn't travel much as a child, but I remember reading about the East and being fascinated by it. Then when I was about 12, I met someone who'd been to Singapore, and to me, that seemed incredible. And of course, when I started in television back in the early 1960s, you didn't travel to make a wildlife program. You went along and filmed at the local zoo. So when I said I'd like to go and film in Africa, the head of programs just laughed at me.
And did you go to Africa?
On that occasion, not, but I eventually got them to allow me to go to Borneo in 1962. There was just me and a cameraman. We went off for 4 months, filming wherever we found something interesting. We bought a canoe, sailed upriver for 10 days, and ended up in a traditional longhouse. Nowadays, of course, it's all quite different.
Difference? In what way?
We do months of preparation before we set off. So when we start filming, we know exactly what scenes we want to get. I mean, you don't get up in the morning and say to your team, what should we do this morning? You have to know exactly what each scene is going to show to work to a strict plan.
Some of your programs have taken place in some pretty remote areas. It's hard to imagine other program makers wanting to risk the dangers or discomfort that you've experienced.
Well, if you want original material, you've got to go off the beaten track. But you can find yourself doing some pretty strange things. Like, for example, on one occasion, jumping out of a helicopter onto an iceberg. There I was, freezing cold, then it started to snow, and the helicopter had gone back to the ship and couldn't take off again. So I was stuck there on this iceberg thinking, this is crazy. I didn't even want to come here.
What I wonder is, where does somebody like yourself, who travels to all these exotic places as part of their work, go on holiday?
I'm not very good at lying on a beach, that's for sure. I wouldn't go to a place just to sit around. It's nice to have an objective when you're traveling, to have something you want to film. I've just come back from the Dominican Republic, and we were put up for the first night in a big hotel. The place was absolutely full of people, just lying there, sunbathing. They seemed quite happy to spend the whole day stretched out around the pool. They never seemed to want to go and explore the amazing things that were to see outside the hotel. For me, that would be a very boring way to spend a holiday.
Your programs, though, must have inspired a lot of people to take their holidays in remote and little-known places.
You are probably right, but, well, I have mixed feelings about all this. I go back to the places where, years ago, I was the only European. And now there are cruise ships coming 3 times a day. So you worry that in 10 years or so, every remote place on the planet will be swallowed up because everyone will be visiting it. But on the other hand, I am in favor of tourism. that is done in a way that protects the environment. You can see a good example of this in the Galapagos Islands, where the tourism is carefully managed. That's very successful and could be a model for the future.